Let's go. Parshas Vayikra, everyone. All right, we've talked about Korbanos in the past, and the truth is that it's kind of hard to speak in Parshas Vayikra without going into Korbanos in any which way. You have to go into something. Something has to work over here. So, Perek Hei Pasuk Chaf Aleph, toward the very end of the Parsha, we talk about a Korban Asham. And here's what the Pasuk says. It says, Nefesh Ki Sechetom Olam Al Hashem. If a person sins and does something wrong in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'kicheish Ba'miso, so he lies to someone in his nation, lies to another Jew, either bipikadon, about something that was deposited by him. A guy gave him something to watch and he lied about it. O bisumas yod, or something which we call something about touching an object wrongly. O begezel, or he lies about thievery, about stealing. O oshakis emiso, or he oppressed his nation. He oppressed some other Jew over here. Now the four sins, these are four. There's a fifth sin in the next pasuk, Chaf Beis, where you swear falsely about a lost item that you found, saying that I never found it. They result in a person having to do the following. Number one, you got to pay the object back. Number two, you got to add a fifth of that object, a fifth of the total amount that that object is worth. You add on another fifth, and it's a fifth meal of bar, so it's really a quarter. Either way. And you have to bring a Korban Asham. You bring a Korban Asham to the Mizbeach. Due to his crime, that's what you end up getting for it. The question is, what makes these five cases different from all others that it requires this double or almost like a triple punishment? You pay it back, you add a fifth, you bring a Korban Asham. Usually it's either one or the other. Either you get a capital punishment or you have to pay something back. But never do you have both of those together. What makes these cases any different that it's going to be like this? So let's go over these five cases once again. Okay, these cases just need to be understood where they are. Number one, Reuven asks Shimon to watch an item for him. Shimon takes the item and says, no problem, I'll take care of it for you, no issues whatsoever. Later, Reuven asks Shimon to return that said item, and Shimon says, I don't think you ever gave it to me in the first place. Denies ever having it in the first place, goes to court, and swears it never happened. That's the first case. The second case, Reuven gave Shimon some money to work with. Shimon is starting a whole business over here, a business operation. In order to invest it properly, he gets a little bit of money, he takes all that money, and he does everything. When Reuven asks for his investment back, and he asks for the money back, Shimon denies ever getting the startup money. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. And not only does he deny it, he goes to court, he swears about it. It's as if he never happened. It could also be that two parties are swearing about a certain deal that they had. They're shaking each other's hands. There's almost a tsumes yad, a shaking of hands, which is normally something that makes a deal happen. And Shimon denies ever having shaken hands in the first place. That deal was never made. He swears it never happened. That is case number two. Case number three, Shimon simply steals something that he likes from Reuven's possession and swears he didn't steal it. That's an easy case, just pure gezeila. Number four, Shimon withholds payments from his workers. His workers are expecting payment. Shimon says to them, I don't know what you're talking about. I have no reason to think that I actually owe you money, and he has no reason for denying it. He claims he thought he already paid them, he didn't pay them, goes to court, swears that he didn't do it, etc. And number five, Shimon finds a lost item in the street. Reuven, who actually lost the item, goes to Shimon and says, hey, can I have my item back? And he says to him, I don't know what you're talking about, swears that he has no idea what he's talking about, and that's what happens. Now, all five cases are basically cases of gezeila. So the Tosefis Bracha asks the question, he says, simply put, why in the world do you need five cases going over the exact same thing all over again? It's not even a big chiddush over here. If I do something wrong and I deny it and swear falsely, then I get punished. It's not like you need all five of the cases. Why does it have to go into each one saying each one there? To answer the question, Tosefis Bracha gives four hakdamos. And I think we all know this. It's cool introductions over here, things that we need to know. Number one, we know what the Yetzer Hara does to get us to do something. If the Yetzer Hara would come up to us and tell us immediately, I'd like you to do Avodah Zarah, you going to listen? Of course you're not going to listen. There's no way that I'm going to do Avodah Zarah. If the Yetzer Hara would come up to me and say, I want you to break Shabbos, I want you to turn on that light on Shabbos, come on, don't you want to turn on that light? I'm going to look at the Yetzer Hara and be like, what are you kidding? There's no way I'm going to turn on a light on Shabbos. That's just not going to happen. So what does the Yetzer Hara do? The Yetzer Hara doesn't get me by saying, turn on a light on Shabbos. It does little things. The little things gets me to do one small avera, and then another small avera, and another small avera, little by little by little, building me up to doing this massive avera that's out there. I'm not going to do anything so like huge in the beginning, but if little by little I break myself down and I do this on Shabbos, maybe it starts off with Borer. And then it goes into something else, maybe toching, grinding, right? On something on my plate, I put something down on my plate and I do something. Then little by little, I've been Mechallel Shabbos over and over and over again, whether I realize it or not, Navera Gorer Savera, eventually that could lead to me turning off a light without realizing it, and then eventually turning off a light because I do realize it. Maybe. That's what it can happen. But that's how the Yetzer Hara works. It gets you little by little by little. Number two, chait always connotes a type of sin that's accidental, meaning something that I didn't know about. I did a chait means I didn't realize that I just did something wrong. That's a chait. Me'ila, which is also a word in the pasuk, ma'olam al b'ashem, refers to a chait that you do that's even worse than that. I do it on purpose, b'mezid, I do something that's totally wrong. That's a chait and a me'ila at the same time, both of those things. Number three, averos between us and our friends, are us and somebody else in Klal Yisrael, is somewhat worse than doing something ben adam l'makom, between me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ben adam l'makom is obviously a horrible sin. If I don't put on tefillin in the morning, if I don't daven, obviously that's a horrible sin, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish me for it. But that's one thing. Ben adam l'chavero, Yom Kippur is not mechaper for. If I try to do something, or if I do something to a friend, and I want to be forgiven for it, there's nothing I can do until I get mechila from that friend. I'm in the midst of something right now. Somebody said something to me, which was not proper, and he asked me for mechila, and it's hard. I want to mean it. I want to mean it. I told him, this is not about you. It's about me actually meaning that I want to be mochel you. And it's difficult. It's difficult to say that to somebody, right? And the person did wrong me in a way, and it was somebody who's a hush of a person. We're not talking about a little nobody, right? But he did something I felt was a little bit wrong, and he felt was a little bit wrong. So he came back to me, asked me for mechila. It's hard to just forgive someone. It's hard to just say, yeah, sure, don't worry about it. It's easy to say, yeah, I forgive you. It's hard to actually mean it, to really mean it. I mean, some say that Yosef HaTzadik never forgave the Shvatim. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that at the end of the Shvatim's lives, they went to Yosef HaTzadik. They begged him for forgiveness. And Yosef HaTzadik said, don't worry about it. But he was never mochel them. He never said out loud that he was mochel them. And that's why we have the Asar Arugi Malchus, the 10 martyrs that happened based on that. Because as much as Yosef HaTzadik forgave them, he never really was mochel them for what they had done. And that's difficult to do. So that's been Adam al-Chavero, and in a way, that's worse than any sin that's been on Lamakom. A fourth idea that comes out over here is that a shvuas sheker, lying falsely, is the most chomer shvua you can think of, and the most chomer sin you can think of. And the reason why is like this. When I sin, it usually affects me and myself. Maybe it affects my immediate family, maybe the people around me, but it just affects the people around me, and that's that. A shvuas sheker affects the world. When you swear falsely, swearing that this shtender is a stone, by swearing by the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and taking HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name in vain, you literally affect the world and make the whole world go down. One of the worst things that you could have is that guy who always says, I swear it's true, I swear it's true. I had a guy who 2 weeks ago swore to me that his father was going to buy him a pair of tzitzis. And I'm like, don't say it, say Bli Nether. He didn't say Bli Nether. His parents did not buy him his pair of tzitzis. So today, yet again, I went up to him for probably the 8th time in a row, and I said, where's your tzitzis? Right? I have a whole thing of tzitzis in my office that I give out just because, you know, kids forget tzitzis somehow. It's something that you just forget. It just happens. Right? And he said, I swear he's going today. Again, it's the same thing. Never swear falsely in such a fashion, even if you mean to say something that's there. Shvuos are so chomer. Don't get involved with it, and it hurts everybody. And that's what the Gemara in Shvuos says, Lama Tassiman Aleph, to be so careful of never, ever saying out of your mouth something that means, absolutely, this is what's going to be. Be very careful. Based on all this, we have a really, really good answer. The whole pasuk is a massive process. At first, it's yecheta. That's what we start off the pasuk with. Nefesh ki secheta. When a person sins, accidentally, it happens. That's how the Yetzer Hara gets us. He gets us to do a little bit of a chet, and then eventually, limo mal b'ashem. What happens? Eventually, you start doing things on purpose. You're so used to sinning, you're so used to doing something wrong, it becomes a mal. If you keep going, then the kichesh ba'miso. You'll do things that are not only against the Kaddish Baruch Hu, but be'navim l'chavero, a worse sin, taking you down a worse path, going down the next level over there, which eventually leads to swearing falsely. A shvuas sheker, lying to somebody else, which is so bad that it's as if you're affecting the entire world. And that, says the Tosefes Bracha, is why we go through all these cases. It's going through one by one, trying to explain how you're getting worse and worse and worse. At first it's denying to your friend, then it's stealing, then it's withholding money that you know belongs to somebody different than even by a lost item which isn't even yours, you're willing to steal. That's how it goes, little by little by little. So that's how Tosefus Bracha explains the idea behind the pasuk itself. The Ben Ishkai, the Darus Elio, asks the same question. He says, basically, all these things are the same. He says, maybe you can answer a lost item is a big chiddush. Maybe you can say there's a difference between gezel and oshek. But the first two, for sure, pikadon and sumes yad, what's the difference between the two? If you lie about a pikadon, you lie about sumes yad, what's the difference? There's an awesome medrash. Vayikra Rabba. Vayikra Rabba, Parsha Vav, Halacha Gimel, brings down an amazing story about a guy by the name of Ben Talamyom. So for those who are experts in Shas, right, Ben Timalyom is the name of a shade who appears in Me'ila Yud Zayin of Abayz, meets up with Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, and he enters the princess's body as a demonic possession to be able to get Ben Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai an ability to get rid of a gezerah, decree against the Jews. That's Ben Timalyon. This is a Ben Talamyon. This is not a demon. This is an actual person. Ben Talamyon was watching 100 dinar for someone else. A guy gave him 100 dinar, and he said, no problem, I'll take care of it. I'll watch it over for you. The man later came to Ben Talamyon and asked for his money back. Right? And although Ben Talamyon was a good guy, we're not talking about a guy who's a Russia, but the Yetzer Hara was either really big for him, and he really wanted to keep this 100 dinar, or he had a reason to believe that it's good for him to keep this money and not give it back to the guy who had given it to him. Whatever it is, whether he seems like a good guy, he did it accidentally or he did it on purpose, one of the two, Ben Talami responded, I already returned you the 100 bucks. I'm not giving you the 100 dinar. I already gave it back to you. The man said to him, I'd like you to swear that in court. Will you go to court and swear that you returned it to me? So Ben Talamyon said, sure, I'll go ahead and swear. Maybe you guys have heard a version of this medrash in some way, shape, or form. So what did he do? He took a staff, a larger staff, hollowed out the entire inside of the staff, took all 100 dinar that the guy had given him and put it inside the staff, one on top of the other, said it became very, very heavy, and then he used that staff and walked into court while standing on the staff. As he was going up to the Beis Din to swear, he turned to the guy who had lent him the money, who had given him the money, and he said to the guy, hey, can I give you my staff while I go swear? Do you mind if I give you my staff to hold while I go swear? So the guy said, sure, I'll hold your staff for you. He's holding the other guy's staff. The guy goes up to the judge, Ben Talamyon, and he says, I swear everything that I got from this guy, I already gave back to him. Did he lie? He gave it right back to him. Sitting in his hands right now inside the staff. All the money's right there. So the guy ended up, the man was so angry that Ben Talamyon, in his mind, had sworn falsely. He took the staff, smashed it on the ground. What happened? The whole staff opened up. The coins spilled everywhere. And Ben Talamyon, knowing he was caught, turned to the guy and said, that's your 100 dinar. You're 100% right. I shouldn't have done it. I feel horrible. Take your 100 dinar and go. Take 100 dinar and go. Unbelievable story, right? The Gemara, the Medrash, uses that as an example of tsumes yod. Pikadon is a pikadon. A guy gives something to me and then I hide it and I say, I don't know what you're talking about, and I put it away and I make sure nobody knows that I have it. That's a pikadon. A tsumes yod is you can't even swear falsely even though you pretend to give it back to him. You take the staff filled with the coins and you give it over to his hand. That's tsumes yod. You put it into the other guy's hands and you say, what do you mean? I already gave it back to you. You can't do that either. That's also stealing. That's also considered gezeila. You can't do that as well. And that, the Ben Ish Chai says, is why we have a case of pikadon, the regular case of pikadon, and a case of tsumes yod as well. It's an amazing medrash, isn't it? At the end of the day. But Ben Salamian apparently did feel bad about what he did. I'm sure he did tshuva, and I'm sure he got mechila at the end of the day. We'll assume. Otherwise, how do I know? I mean, it's got to be obvious, right? Why would the Medrash say his name? Wouldn't that be pure Lashon Hara? Straight up Lashon Hara, wouldn't it be? It's got to be that he's a good guy and that he did tshuva as soon as he could, right? He just got his Yetzer Hara grab a hold of him, or he had a reason for taking the money away. Otherwise, there's no reason to know his name. You would never do that. You wouldn't say the name of a person who had done something so bad. Let's go into the word me'ila. The Netziv says that word me'ila, which means that sin, is shinui reshus. It means money has exchanged hands from one to another. The possession went from one person to the other. It went from the person who was supposed to have it to a person who wasn't supposed to have it, and he's using it inappropriately. Although just swearing it's not in your possession does not really acquire it for the thief. The thief does not own something just by swearing that it's his. From that point on, once you swear that you return the item, when you swear falsely in court about an item that you took, at that point you're chayiv in onsin for anything that might happen to that item. If something happens, if I swear I already returned it to you, and then something happens to the money, a crazy ones, lightning strikes and destroys all the money that's in my possession, nonetheless, I owe that money. It changes the status of the object, so it's almost like it belongs to me, even though halakhically it doesn't belong to me just by stealing itself. Rashi says, these cases are all called mal ba'ashem, because simply put, there are no documents in this case. If there were documents, if there were shtaros, you would go to court and you'd bring the shtar, say the guy owes me, and if the guy says I paid you back, he would have to prove it, right? That's the idea of what would happen in this case. In this case, all you got, you have no witnesses, you have nothing else, it's just one man's word against the other, you deny it in court, and therefore, because you swear falsely in court, that's the idea of what happened, something is going on with that, and that's essentially denying God. What does that mean, it's denying God? Well, who else knows about this? It's you and the other guy. It's just you and him. Only you and him know what's going on. When you say, I don't know what you're talking about, you're denying God's involvement in the situation. You're saying that something's so wrong. And that's why, in this case, although normally we only say to get punished once, you owe the guy a penalty, that's why you pay him, and you owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu a penalty, because you're denying God's involvement. You're denying God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ashkacha. Therefore, you give a Korban Asham. You have to do both of those things because of that guy and because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu itself. In other words, if I deny a loan that witnesses saw being given, if I deny it, the witnesses will come along and say, no, we saw it, we know you did it, and they'll be able to say that. If there are no witnesses, the only person that I'm saying is wrong is God. The other guy, obviously, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu watched this loan happen, you're saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't see it properly. And that is wrong. That's something that we can't do. It's so bad that an extra korban is added on, not like anything else, because it's against HaKadosh Baruch Hu and it's against the man itself. Rashi in Divrei Yomim says the exact same thing. This is so prominent, because people have to keep their word. The only way that economies work is when there's trust between two different people, when there's trust between two different economies, when you're dealing with Chinese and American relations, when it comes to the dollar versus what's going on in China and the deals that they're making right now with embargoes, etc. If there's trust, you don't have to worry about anything. But there's no trust. America doesn't trust China. China doesn't trust America. If there's no trust, you can't go based on the person's word. So you have to have everything ready. You have to have everything put down everywhere. And if you don't, what are you going to do? When there's no God involved, when you don't believe in God, then anything can happen. And that's why it's so important never to break your word to anyone, no matter what, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved. On the other hand, Ibn Ezra says every sin, Bein Adam L'Chavero, is a Me'ila. Not just when it goes up against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but every sin when you sin against your fellow man, you steal from him, you take something from him, you grab something you're not supposed to get, that is called a Me'ila. I don't know where he gets that from, but he calls that a Me'ila because it's so wrong, it's so against what a person is supposed to do. Rav Sternbuch says in Tam V'Das that even when people are so careful not to do something wrong to their friend, stealing's in a different category. How many times do we use our friend's stuff without even thinking about it? Without even thinking about it. When you're in yeshiva, taking someone's towel and drying your hands on the towel is not something you think about twice. Not at all. Why would he care? He wouldn't care. It wouldn't matter to him whatsoever. But using someone's towel doesn't even bother you. It doesn't bother you. If you need to go outside and your coat is somewhere else and you see your friend's coat right there, of course, I'm just going to grab his coat and put it on. And the truth is, maybe your friend doesn't care. It's possible he doesn't care whatsoever. But you can't do it without asking. That still is in the category of gezel, even if, the person would for sure let you use it if you knew about it. You got to be careful about that. You have to have, maybe go up to your friend at all times, just be like, listen, if you ever need something of mine. But even then, who knows? Who knows what's going to be with that? There's so many things that you have to be careful of when it comes to gezeila, and people don't think it's hurting other people. They think, like, what's the big deal? The guy bought a whole thing of Mike and Ike's, and everybody's taking one. What's the big deal? But that sin was enough to destroy the people at the times of the Mabul, that everybody went up to the people in the shuk and took one apple, one banana, one orange, orange, one grape, and said, what did I do? I just took one little thing. I didn't do anything. And that caused the mabul to happen. That's why, says Rav Schermbach, we're so extreme about this type of a case. Of course you're not supposed to steal. We know you're not supposed to steal. If you would ask anyone in the street, 100% of the time, you could ask everyone you know, billions of people in this world, are you allowed to steal? The answer is no. Everyone knows this. This is the most obvious thing in the world. But nonetheless, our Yetzirah gets to us and says, but our friend won't mind. Our friend's not going to care. What's the big deal? I'm not hurting him anyway. Those are the lines that we give because we say to ourselves, what's the big deal? And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it not just once or twice. Gezeila is all over that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us not to do it. And even Lo Signov in the Aseres HaDibros, which really means don't kidnap, has within it the words don't steal. I know it doesn't mean don't steal. I know it's referring to kidnapping. But it's talking about stealing within that vernacular so that we know it's wrong to steal. I'm not talking about that with the Aseres HaDibros, but it's there. It's one of the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. Rav Schermbach says, he's warning us over and over and over again, even a penny. And Chas V'Shalom, there's that line that said that if you take one thing from somebody, who knows what happens to us in Olam Haba. There's a story, and I again, it's one of those stories, I don't remember if this is a Medrash, if this is from Rav Nachman, Mibreslov, I don't remember where this is from, and I tried looking it up and I couldn't find it anywhere. That's why you won't find it on the sheet, because it wasn't positive exactly where this story comes from, and I like getting things from the actual source. And I'm sure like somebody's going to tell me, oh, it's obvious, it's right over here, and I couldn't remember where it was. What? Yeah, for all the guys who are watching online. But everybody here, you probably know this story, and you probably heard it before, and you're just going to be like, oh, right, it's obvious, it's like this. There was a guy who ended up going, he needed business, he wasn't doing so well in his hometown, and he decided he was going to go to a faraway land. He was going to travel by boat to a faraway land, to an island far, far away, and he would go there, and he was told that people who go there, you have to spend a long time there, and you got to work really hard, but if you do it, you're going to make a ton of money, and you'll be able to bring it back with you, everything will be okay. So he came to this land, it took him a long time, he said goodbye to his family, and it was a long trip to get there, 6 months, 7 months, just to get to this land itself. He came in, and he greets the people that are in charge of the city, the government that's in charge of the city, and the governor says to him, listen, you can do anything you want here, it's going to be awesome, but here's the deal. If you owe anybody anything at the end of your trip, you cannot leave. Do not leave unless you make sure you pay absolutely everyone everything that you owe, otherwise you can't get back here. And the guy says, of course, I'll take care of everything. And he goes and he works for years and years and years, 2, 3, 4 years, and he's so happy, he's able to make a ton of money, enough money to live comfortably for the rest of his life. And he gets back on the boat, and somebody warns him again, make sure, did you pay everyone back? And he's like, I'm sure, I paid everyone back, it's not that big of a deal, right? Don't worry about it. If anything, it was maybe like a penny or something, but it's not that big of a deal. Gets on the boat, and he starts going all the way back, and he's getting to the dock. He's ready by the dock 7 months later, and the family is all sitting there waving at him. They're so happy to see him. They haven't seen him in so long. It's been years, years and years and years. His kids are all gone, he can see, and he's so happy, and he's waving back, and he's like, I'm almost there. And a little boat comes by, one of those little police boats comes by, right? Comes right up and says, that guy, you, there's a guy who has a claim in a small court for $5. You got to come back. He says, $5? I'll just give you the $5. And he said, that's not how we work. You knew. This is a place where if they have a claim against you, you must go to court. She said, but it's a 7 month trip and then it's 7 months back. And the family is sitting at the side. They're looking. They're like, what's going on? Right? And he has to get off the boat. And he goes into the police boat and he travels all the way back. 7 months to be able to go back there to pay back the $5. And only afterward he ends up coming back. And even then, the whole time he's worried, maybe there's another claim, maybe there's another problem. And the nimshal is that we go to Shemayim after 120, we're expected to have clean hands. Did you borrow from anyone? Do you owe anybody something? Did you steal from someone something that you might not even recognize? What are you going to do? And in Shemayim, they don't take no for an answer. They don't take mechila for an answer just like that. It has to be real mechila. So we come back down after 120, and we go up there, and our family is waiting for us. All of our family is sitting there waiting for us to come, sitting in Olam Haba, and we're intercepted by the police, who come along and say to us, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, and chas v'sholem, it should never happen. That's where gogulim come into play. You're going to have to come back in order to pay that back, pay back the money, pay back that tiny little bit of thing that you owed, and that's the worst thing in the world. The last thing you want is to have to come back. Why would you want such a thing? It's a crazy concept, but that's the idea behind it. Rav Yechiel Michel Feinstein, I don't know if people know who he is. He was a gadol b'Yisrael, zatzal, I should say. Passed away 15 years ago, I think it was. Lived in Bnei Brak. Is related to Rav Moshe. Was very, very old when he passed away, in his 90s when he passed away. He refused to receive any services for free. So there was a doctor, Dr. Tzvi Distenik, who was an eye doctor, an ophthalmologist. He used to take care of Rav Yechiel Michel Feinstein's eyes for, you know, whatever it was, and that. Rav Yechiel Michel Feinstein said, ask for the fee after he was finished. And the doctor told him, it's going to cost this amount of money, but don't worry about it, I'm going to take care of you. To which he said, I can't let you do this. I'm not letting anything happen for free. He didn't want to use his Keser Torah, the honor that he got from the Torah. He said, I'm not letting you do it for free, I'm going to pay you. Okay, so we used to pay him every time. One time, he went to Dr. Distenik. One time, Rav Feinstein went to Dr. Distenik, and he didn't have any money on him. So it was late at night, because he used to go at a time when it was after night seder, right? So it was late at night, so he felt bad. Dr. Stennis said, don't worry about it. You can bring it back to me tomorrow. You can bring it whenever the next time you come. There's no need for you to worry about it. Just go. Don't worry. About an hour later, it was late at night. It was almost 12 o'clock, 12:30 at night. Dr. Stennis was just finishing up what he had to do in the offices, taking care of all the little things, and he hears a knock on the office doors. Goes to open it. It's Rav Yechiel Michel Feinstein himself. He says, Rebbe, This is a busha. This is a busha. You shouldn't be here. You could have sent a messenger. You could have come back tomorrow. Or I could be mochel alone. I don't need you coming to me at 12:30 at night to give me a little bit of money. That's ridiculous. Rav Yechiel Michel Feinstein said an unbelievable thing. And Dr. Distenik said, it's something that hit him. He said, I would never trust a shliach to give money unless I knew that he was going to be there, and I couldn't trust that that's going to happen. I wanted to make sure I didn't have any debts on me, and I wouldn't go to sleep until I made sure I took care of this debt. So therefore, I came to the offices to give you the little bit of money, right, to make sure that it was taken care of. It's such a line is ridiculous to all of us, isn't it? Like, do you not owe somebody $5 right now? Is there someone here who doesn't owe someone $5? Who doesn't owe somebody $5? We don't think of it that way. The truth is, that's how we should treat it. And that's why it goes over and over and over again, how we have to be so careful with everything that we have and everything that we owe. And if you don't owe $5 to somebody, amazing. You are an unbelievable person. You are somebody who has done amazing. You are like Rav Yechiel Michel Feinstein. But that's the idea. We always owe somebody. We're not even thinking about it. We don't even think about what it is. Or Chaim HaKadosh. He says what the words Los Kisechata refers to. He goes through a bunch of issues over here and he says an unbelievable thing. He said, there are three issues that are brought down over here, and he defines them as three terrible things you cause by doing these sins that we're talking about over here. He says, number one, you're doubting Hashem's Ashkacha Pratis in this world. As we talked about before, you're saying God's not involved. And that's horrible. That's the worst thing in the world. You're doubting that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really involved. Number two, you're making Hashem change everything. When you steal from someone else, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to get this guy his money back. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to make sure that that money that you really shouldn't have doesn't really stay by you. So you're going to have to change. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to change the world a little bit to make sure that that guy gets his money and that you don't get that money, etc. He's got to change everything around. And number three, you're making others look terrible. Somebody's accusing you, right? Somebody's accusing you. And you're going to court and you're swearing it never happened. And that's horrible. There's somebody that needs something and you're not doing it. You know what happened with the Rishash, right? The famous story of the Rishash in the back of the Gemara, not Rishon Sharabi, the Rishash in the back of your Gemara. That Rishash, he was known as a moneylender, and very famous as a moneylender. He was a very, very wealthy man. In fact, his parish is unbelievable, but he paid his way to get into the Gemara. He paid the printing press to be able to put his parish in the back of the Gemara, right? Because he was wealthy. He was a very, very wealthy man, the Rishash. The Rishash, this moneylender, so he lent money to a certain tailor, and the tailor borrowed the money from the Rishash, took it, used it for wherever, and he was supposed to pay it back by a certain date. On that date, or maybe a day before, the tailor came to the Rishash's house. The door was open, so he came inside. No one else was home. The Rishash is sitting in his base medrash, and he's learning shtark. Holding in a certain gemara. He's holding his head. He's got his eyes closed. And the man says, okay, look, it's not, you know, I don't want to wait here. I don't want to bother him while he's in the middle of learning. So he takes the bag of money that he had to pay back the Rishash, puts it down on the Gemara that he was learning, on that Gemara that Rishash was learning from. The Rishash was going through a sugya, finally he realized what time it was, he said, oh, mincha, takes the Gemara, closed it up completely. It was a Gemara that he never uses, picked up the Gemara afterward, put it back on the shelf, did not see the money inside it, didn't realize there was money inside it, put it back on the shelf. Later on, he's looking at his ledger, going through all the things that, you know, people that owe him money and these and that and the other. He's going through all the different people that owe him money and realizes this tailor never paid him back. So, you know, he says, okay, that happens. He calls up the tailor and he says, you know, I lent you a certain amount of money not too long ago. Do you mind paying me back? So no ribbis involved, right? This is the Rashash. He wouldn't do such a thing. So the tailor said, I paid you back. Rashash says, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, I came into your house. I put it down on your desk. Rashash says, I have no recollection of this. I don't have any sign of this. It's not in my ledger. So the guy said, I don't know. I paid you back. I put it down on top of your Gemara. I put it down on top. Rashash says, listen, I hear you, but I can't do this. I have to take you to Beis Din. So Rashash took this man to Beis Din, took the tailor to Beis Din. They went to Beis Din. What's the halacha in such a case? The tailor's claiming he paid it back in the right time. The Rashash is saying, I don't have any proof of it. What do you do in that case? So simply put, the tailor has to swear that he paid it back. That's what you have to do, right? The tailor has to swear that he paid it back. It's a motzi mechaver olav araya. So the Rashash himself was the motzi mechaver olav araya. It's on him. The tailor had to swear that he paid it back. And if he swears that he paid it back in the proper time, then that's fine. That's it. Even though he has a shtar, but he swears that he paid it back in a certain time, that's enough. You didn't need witnesses for it. You don't need any aid for it. And Rashash said, no, I can't let this guy swear. I can't let this guy swear. I don't want a person to make a possible shvuas sheker on my behalf just because of me. I'll mokel the money completely. Don't worry about it. I don't need the money back. And the whole court case is ended. They said, okay. The tailor obviously didn't have to pay back. But everyone was so mad at the tailor. You stole money from the Rashash? You stole money from the Rashash. And you didn't even have to swear to it because the Rashash is mokel the money to you. No one went to him. No one. And after 3 years, the tailor was unbelievably destitute. He had nothing. He had to move out of town to a little hovel on the outskirts of town, right? And he's sitting there in this little, because nobody was giving him any money, and he barely made it as a panhandler going around begging people for money. That's all he made because nobody was giving him anything. Nobody was giving him any jobs. 3 years later, the Rashash pulls out the Gemara from his shelves, opens it up, and he sees the money sitting inside it. And he's like, where is this? And he realizes this is the tailor's money. He realized that was the sugya that he was learning on that day when the guy was supposed to pay him back. He realizes, I can't believe it. I had it the whole time. He runs to the gabbai in the shul and he says, where's the tailor? He says, the tailor? I don't know. He moved out of town a while ago. He goes around. Eventually, he finds him on the outskirts of town. He sees him in trouble. He's like, I can't believe it. I'm so sorry. This is the money. You were 100% right. The tailor said, great. I'm right. You ruined my life. You ruined my life. Right, nobody's coming to me anymore. I lost all my money. I lost all my business. And now I've been destitute for the last 3 years because you did that. I'm not mochel. Rashash says, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to shul. I'm going to clap on the bima. And I'm going to say, I was wrong. The tailor was right. I found the money inside my Gemara. And the tailor said, that's not going to work. Everyone's going to be like, oh, the Rashash is such a big tzaddik. The Rashash wants everyone to think that really he found the money when really he didn't find the money. And the tailor, then that, they're going to think you are the tzaddik and me is a bigger Rasha, right? That I need help from the Rashash. Rashash sat there and he thought about it. And he said, okay, there's only one way to prove that I'm okay with it and that I was wrong, right? One way. Do you have a daughter? Yes. I have a son. I'll marry my son off to your daughter. And his son married her. They didn't have a choice, by the way. Okay, so don't even think of that. There was no choice there. The son had to... I'm joking, I don't know. Apparently they loved each other, so it worked out well. But the son and the daughter ended up marrying each other, right? And at the end of the day, right, everybody knew that the Rashash had made a mistake and that the tailor was right. Taylor obviously found his way back and things were all good. See how scary that is? Imagine if the Rashash never found that money. Imagine if he never found the money whatsoever. What are you going to do? What are you supposed to do in that situation? Like, can you imagine going up to Shemayim after 120 and ruining that guy's life? You ruined it. You ruined it because it's not even a mistake. Siyata d'shmaya. That's really how it goes. It goes with pure siyata d'shmaya. I don't want to say the Rashash didn't have siyata d'shmaya. Chas v'shalom, I wouldn't say such a thing. But siyata d'shmaya is the only way to go. You have no idea. You have absolutely no idea. It's really an unbelievable line. The Kli Yakar points out that the Pasuk uses the word chait, secheta, before using the word me'ila. As we said, ki secheta u'mo'ala ma'o ba'ashem. First chait, and then me'ila. When we talk about stealing something from Hektish, it's the opposite. It's me'ila first, and then secheta. First there's an idea of me'ila, and then there's an idea of chait itself. You know why? Because this is talking about denying money and then swearing falsely. You deny it to somebody else, that's a chait, and then you're swearing falsely, which is a me'ila against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. You go up against your friend, and then you go against the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so there's sechet on the me'ila itself. When stealing from Hekdesh, we say me'ila first. Because the first thing you did by grabbing that object and taking it for yourself, by stealing from Hekdesh, is you went up against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Only later on are you stealing also what the Kohen could have. The Kohen should have an object. The other people should have an object here. And therefore, it's Me'ila first and Chet over there. Reb Levi says in Baba Basra, it's in Peichas Mabez. Stealing from another person, we said something like this, is worse than stealing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because like this, stealing from person is a Chet, and then Me'ila when you deny what you did. But when stealing from Hashem, the Chet and the Me'ila come together. Chet and the Me'ila come together. And it's different. It's different. It's if you're over on two things rather than one. And as we said before in Rashi, that's why you're chayiv twice. You're chayiv to pay and you're chayiv in an ashram, which is not normal. Because you're doing two things over here. Rabbi Noah Ephraim talks about this as well, and that's the idea. The Tzror HaMor says such a beautiful line. He says, we have no ability to discern the absolute truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha in the world. We have no idea. All we know is that it exists. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has Hashgacha. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching over us, and that's that. When things are painful, we lift our eyes to the heavens and we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me. That's what we do, right? We ask, we beg, we dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please help me, because we believe He's there when we're in pain. And yet, when we steal from other people, we pretend like He's not looking down at you. We pretend like He's not really there. When you take from someone, you're denying that Hashgacha almost completely, as if He's not eyeing you the entire time. Stealing Hekdesh is an inability to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us what we need. Stealing from other people is the same way. We're not recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ability to always save us, not just when we look up to the heavens, but at all times. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there for us at all times. And if you just believed it, you simply put believe it, then you wouldn't have to worry about anything. There's no reason to take from somebody else, to do that deal that's under the table, the deal that no one else is going to know about. And the last thing we're going to talk about before we end is this Shach Al HaTorah and the Kli Yakar, again, another Kli Yakar. There is a deeper meaning over here, something a little deeper, where the Shach says this pasuk is a reference to our neshamos. Biyadcha afkid ruchi. In your hands, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I give my soul every night. When I go to sleep, I give HaKadosh Baruch Hu my soul. But the truth is, it's not that way. It's not like I'm giving HaKadosh Baruch Hu my soul as a pikadon, right? It's Hashem giving us our souls as a pikadon from up above. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us something for us to have, which we wouldn't have had otherwise. Listen to this Kli Yakar. He says, let's say someone asked me if they can borrow a certain sefer of mine. And I say 100%, sure. You want a sefer? I'll give you my sefer. I have no problem with that. I'll give you my sefer. The next day he returns it to me, and I look at it. There's pages torn. There's food all over the place. There's oil stains. You know those oil stains that you get? Like those stains all over the pages of the Gemara. So look at it. I'm like, this is absolutely disgusting. I pick it up. The whole sefer smells. The whole sefer smells. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting, right? Well, you can imagine, if that guy comes to me the next day, what am I going to do? The guy comes up to me and says, can I borrow your sefer again? No, you can't borrow my sefer. Look what you did to it. You tore pages. You have a stain on it. You have crumbs. I'm not saying this mushel out of nowhere. This actually happened to me. My third year in Eretz Yisrael, a boy who was in my ninth grade class in Skokie Yeshiva and then made Aliyah and came in. So he came into the Beis Medrash. He asked to borrow a certain Gemara from me. I still remember. I'll tell you. It's a Makos. I still have the Gemara Makos. He asked to borrow my Gemara Makos while I was going to Shir. And I said, 100%. And I was sitting in Shir. The Shir was in the main Beis Medrash. And he was sitting in the back learning from the Gemara. The guy I saw, after like 3 minutes, fell asleep on the Sefer. Now, that's not that big of a deal. You know what was the big deal? He was eating something, and left the piece of food on the other daf. It's on daf Dalet Amud Aleph and Makos. Okay? I don't mean to say it this way. Drool got all over the sefer to the point where it literally soaked the page, and all sticky, because he was eating something sticky. And when I came there and I woke him up afterward, he got up and two of the pages just tore out of the Gemara with him. And I had notes all over that Gemara. And I looked at him, I'm like, what are you thinking? What did you do? You literally ruined my Gemara. And he's like, I'm sorry, I'll pay you back for it. I said, I have notes in this Gemara. What are you thinking? Can you imagine if that guy came up to me? It's fine. Can I borrow it more now? No, of course you can't borrow it more. Look what you did. You literally ruined my Gemara, and I still have it. You can still look at it in my house. I still have that Gemara, Daf Beis and Daf Gimel. Notes all over, a little bit of a sticky spot all around. I put water on it. I sponged it down and then dried it out to be able to get rid of some of it. Some of the ink is a little runny, but otherwise, it's pretty much, it was there. But no way am I going to lend this guy anything anymore, right? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Get it? No, it wouldn't be shame. Okay. Get it? That's the idea behind it? It just doesn't make any sense, right? You wouldn't do it. Every single night, we deposit our neshamos by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We give our neshamos back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And every morning, he gives it to us fresh, as if there's nothing wrong with it, as if we're all ready to go. And we deposit it back by him, and we're like, okay, here's what we did. And we're giving torn pages, drool all over, candy marks and oil marks all over the place. That's what we're giving our neshama back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with. And Hashem, every single night, takes our neshamos back and says, it's all good. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'll clean it off for you again. I'll clean it off. I'll take care of it. And then he gives it right back to us. Every single day. Every day we do that. It's unbelievable. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has never said to us, well, unfortunately he has, but there are most of you're waking up every single morning without any problem whatsoever. That's the idea behind the pasuk, says the Torah more. Says the Torah more. We should never withhold any pikadum from anybody else. Never deny what we might have in our hands. Because if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is willing to give back to us our pikdonos, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is willing to give back to us what we've given, what he's given to us, what we gave to him, something so dirtied and sullied and destructive, etc., then you better believe we should do it for other people as well. We shouldn't deny, we shouldn't do anything bad. We should always work on trying to make sure we've done the right thing, giving back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all times. Says the Torah more, that's the basic idea behind it. There's lumdis behind the pasuk, k'sav ha-kabbalah, the malbim, the maral diskin, and the yelos ha-shachar, but we're not going to go through that tonight. Have a great Shabbos, everybody.